You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Spotlight on eWomen, the place for everything eWomen Network. Entrepreneur, enterprising, enlightening, and exciting. Please welcome your eWomen host, Phyllis Smith.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight on eWomen Network. I'm Phyllis Smith. So our members spotlight focuses on members of eWomen Network who have a story to tell, a story of rising to success despite their circumstances. We've all been through it. We've all got stuff, right? But some are more extreme than others. And my guest today is no exception to that. She was raised in a family of parents who have suffered from mental illness. Her mother was an addict. There was violence and abuse. And yet today, she has a successful business. She is a woman who has so much peace and wellness and love to give. I just adore being around this woman. Please welcome Felicia Searcy. Welcome, Felicia.
Yeah, thank you, Phyllis. It's my joy to be here this morning.
So, I just described a life of being raised by both parents who have mental illness. Oftentimes, it's one, not both. And violence and abuse. So let's start there. Let's start from the beginning. And tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in your home. What kind of mental illness are we talking about? What kind of addiction are we talking about?
Yeah, so let me say just right up front that as I share this, know that I'm sharing the human element that shows up in so many people as they become disconnected from the essence of who they are, whether it shows up as an addiction or mental illness, or just an unawareness that then results in unskilled behavior. And that as I share this, know that I'm sharing it from the perspective of realizing that my parents gave the absolute best that they could at the level of awareness that they had. And I'm deeply grateful that I have had a terrific level of support and study to arrive at that awareness and that relationship with my past and actually with both my parents. So my mother was a drug addict, alcoholic, depressive, probably had borderline personality issues going on. My father was bipolar, which then would manifest in forms of rage. So you know, what was fascinating about it, outside looking in, we looked good. He taught at the local Catholic high school. He was a football coach, very successful. You know, had a big write-up in the paper. But, you know, as with many families, when there's these kinds of conditions, you walk in the door and it's like, you know, behind closed doors, there was that hair trigger violence in terms of my father's rage and my mother's inability. There were five of us, and so we were you know, and we were stair step, you know, boom boom boom, one right after the other. And so it was a tremendous amount for her to deal with, and being unequipped and dealing with her own depression and alcoholism and drug addiction. So things like, you know, my mother had several suicide attempts growing up, and she somehow there was something I think that I came in with, which again, I'm very grateful for. And she would have them when I was the only one in the house. And so I stopped her, found her, took care of that. You know, I took on the role of making sure my brothers were fed, particularly after my dad left, you know, making sure that things were taken care of in the household during the times when my mother was not able to. And this is not saying this is not black or white, that they were, that it was all horrible, but during those periods of times when she was just incapable of showing up in that role, I would take that role on and make sure that, you know, we had food and things were taken care of. And so,
but let me jump in there, Felicia, for a second. So how old were you when this was going on for the most part, your whole youth?
Yeah. When my mom, there's 13 months between my younger brother and I, and a couple of months after my brother was born. So I was a little over a year old. My mother was admitted into a mental institution, into a mental hospital because of postpartum depression. And then when she was, when I was 9 or 10 is when I remember the beginning of the suicide attempt, and her alcoholism really took off when I was preteens and teens. And my dad, I grew up in Wisconsin, and my dad moved back south to Louisiana, and one by one took kids with him. And so I was the last one left with my mother. And I remember him asking me to move down. And so here's, you know, and he was still in his illness, but it's like one parent, he was able to rise up some and take on some, you know, be responsible. My father was, even in his rage, he had a remarkable sense of family. So there was just this dichotomy and mixed messages. And underlying, here's the thing that I think people miss with this, is that with both my parents, there was a deep underlying desire to want to do better, to want to love. And what I'm grateful for is that my ability to be able to have a somewhat of a sense of that growing up, and to be able to know and claim that for myself now, that they, you know, even though you intellectually know better, if it's not in your beingness, you can't act beyond what fundamentally you know in your beingness, how you identify yourself. And so there was just such a disconnect for them. And you could see that it was incredibly painful for them as well, that they couldn't quite show up in the way, particularly with my mother, that she couldn't quite show up in the way that she wanted to. So I'm grateful that that came through.
Yeah. And let me jump in again. So when you're, now you realize it as a grown up, right? And we're going to talk about you, how you came to knowing that. But when you're a child experiencing the two people you trust most in the world, the two people who are supposed to be your cushion, and for you to fall on, now you are the one being the cushion for them. Am I right? And you're having to grow up. Kind of right, reminds me in a certain way of the show Shameless, which is one of my favorite shows, where the kids, you know, have to take charge, you know, the oldest daughter. But you weren't even in the oldest of the siblings.
No, I was in the middle.
And yet you were still taking, you know, you took on the role of the nurturer. And it's really fascinating to me when you hear stories like this about rising above. So what was the pivotal moment for you to turn things around that enabled you to rise above?
So, great question. So I when I got into high school and college in particular, and I was somewhat removed from it. You know, there was still behaviors. I mean, my mother called in college and would threaten suicide if I didn't come back home and take care of her. And, you know, there was 1,000 miles between us because I was in Louisiana and she was in Wisconsin. I got into an incredibly dark place in terms of depression and just deep sense of unworthiness and self-loathing. You know anything about kids who grow up in dysfunctional families, particularly alcoholism with mental illness, we there's this element of taking on a sense of, what did I do to cause this? And am I even, you know, do I even have a right to be here, kind of thing? And what happened was, My dad remarried, and a remarkable woman, and she had kids, and several family members, without breaking anonymity, developed addictions issues of their own. And so my stepmother stepped in and began to support people going into treatment. And so when the first family member went through treatment, I went through a family week and I grabbed onto it for everything that I was worth, because for the first time in my life, I had an explanation that it wasn't just that there was something wrong with me, that I did something to cause this, but that there really was something biological going on. And so as a result, I got involved. I was 22 when I started a 12-step program specifically designed for family members of addicts, and dealt with the mental illness piece of it as well, which then led me to develop a relationship with a spiritual energy. I don't care what you call it. You can call it the universe, you can call it God, you can call it love, you can call it universal force. You know, Price Pritchard calls it unseen forces. Napoleon Hill calls it infinite intelligence. I call it spirit. I call it the spirit of life. And to develop a relationship with this creative force that breathed us into existence to help me heal, to help me understand and separate the behavior from the essence of the person, and to develop a sense of compassion and understanding that if they could have done better, they would have done better. And I think one of the most powerful pieces for me was to understand that it really didn't have anything to do with me. I just happened to be the one there. It was not something because of me personally. It was because of their own demons. And so as I just took a deep dive into my own healing process, I was able to wake up to elements of myself that had been there all along. And I can look back and realize that there were elements in me that just fundamentally were there the entire time I was growing up. And that as I've been able to harness and continue, I mean, you know, it's an ongoing evolution. As I've been able to continue to harness those elements and expand and grow, it allows me to grow into an even greater version of me as I support other people in becoming even greater versions of themselves, understanding that as we embrace our human experience, it deepens our awareness that there really is this life force moving through us, and that life is fundamentally good. People are fundamentally good. The universe is fundamentally good. And when we're able to tap into that, no longer are we defined by our past or our conditions, but we are catapulted by them.
Yeah, and that's absolutely. One thing about, just for a moment, is with mental illness, you know, there's all the, often it's really a chemical dysfunction, right? The brain just ain't working, and yeah, the body and the whatever's going on. Did you ever have a concern that you had mental illness as well?
Yeah. In fact, I'll never forget when I was, it's a great question, especially in college when I got so depressed and, you know, suicidal myself, and I was terrified that I was gonna, particularly my mother, I was terrified that I was gonna end up like my mother, because it was just, in the human form, it was ugly. I mean, her behavior, it was just insidiously ugly. She wasn't, but the behavior, the way that she would show up in her illness, and I wanna make sure that people hear the distinction between the two, that this is not a characterization of my mother, that it's understanding that there was something so profound going on inside of her that there was her inability to monitor that. She just didn't have it. And so the abuse, the sexual abuse, I mean, it was just, so I was terrified that I would end up like her. So when people started, I actually did like five family weeks in a space of 2 months. So I kind of went to my own treatment, but I didn't go inpatient because I didn't have any, you know, I wasn't an addict and I didn't have, I was not mentally ill. It was such a relief to have an explanation and understand that, number one, it was mental illness. It wasn't just like, quote, unfettered craziness. And that I didn't exhibit the symptoms. I didn't have it. And if I did, I knew now that there was help. But back in the 60s and the early 70s, you know, they're just, well, 60s through 70s, we didn't have the awareness that we have today. I mean, people just struggled and suffered through it.
It's so hard when you see someone and someone you love in such pain. At the time, I imagine when you're young, you're pissed off. It's like, why does this have to happen? Maybe, or when you walk in the, not knowing how you're, I mean, my husband grew up where his parents were abusive to each other. And this whole sense of, you never know what's going to happen when you walk in the door. It's this constant state of kind of fear.
Yes.
You know, and then you build up a wall. Did it impact you in any way in your relationships where you kind of built up a wall or you didn't have trust or all this work that you did in your early 20s or when you were in college helped you, you know, bypass that part of it?
Well, so here's what's interesting about this, and this is what I help folks understand, is that there are patterns that get established that will continue to run at such a insidious level, even after forgiveness work. So I think the wall for me was that illusion of unworthiness, and that there was a part of me that didn't feel like I deserved love, or I had to keep earning love. I had to keep proving myself. And that's an element that I still have to keep a very close eye on today, because it was a survival pattern that unaware I allowed to get wired into me. And so now to recognize the signals in my thought process, in my body, in the way I'm seeing myself, and to be able to do the pattern interrupt and say, you know what, that's not accurate. But I tell you the other thing, Phyllis, that I'm very aware of. One of the things that because you're right, it's my life was dependent on being able to read the temperature of the room. And that's not being dramatic, but there was that level of violence that was actually life-threatening. And so my life became dependent on being able to read the temperature of the room, being able to really read the nuances in people, which what it makes me so brilliant at what I do today. So to be able to harness that gift of being able to read beyond just the face value of somebody, but to really be able to like crawl inside their skin almost in a very compassionate, life-giving way to help them see things that they can't see for themselves because they're inside the frame. I have, and I'm very grateful for this, and I say this humbly, I have an incredibly developed intuition and sensibility about people. And I know that it's a direct result of growing up in the environment that I grew up in, which allows me to serve people at such a higher level, which I'm grateful for. I also believe that I've developed a deep sense of compassion for people because I understand what suffering looks like when people want to do something different. But what's fascinating about the anger, I didn't have the luxury growing up as a kid to be angry. It was too dangerous in my household to be angry. It wasn't until after I left and I began the deep internal healing work and forgiveness that I allowed myself just to experience the depths of rage that just got buried into my body. And I'm grateful that I was surrounded by really highly calibrated professionals who helped me work through it in a very empowering way where I was able to release it and move it toward forgiveness rather than continue to allow it to fester and define me.
Wow. And a lot of the word that keeps coming up from you is gratitude. So with all that you've been through, is there anything, would you change it? Knowing what you know now and the work that you're able to provide others to help them transform and find their dream, is there, I'm kind of answering your question, is there anything you would change?
You know, there are moments when I look and say, oh God, it would have been great to grow up with the Cleavers, right? Or the Brady Bunch. Like I was raised on the Brady Bunch or the Partridge Family. But no, you know, if you change any element of your history, what's the domino effect of that? And so knowing who I am today, and how, and grateful for it again, and I say this humbly, but grateful for, as all of us are this remarkable, magnificent being, and the path that that has led me to the degree of awareness that I am grateful to be able to have today, and the help. I mean, just the ongoing support and help, and I continue to keep myself in highly calibrated containers as I go deeper into my awareness, my relationship with this infinite intelligence, and my ability to really hear what's happening inside of me in order to more effectively serve other people. No, what I'm so grateful for is that I am able to use my history with people who want to use theirs as an excuse to not go forward, that I can say, look, if I can do it, anybody can do it. There's not a single person that I've talked to where it's, you know what, not, and there are a lot of people who experience horrendous situations, and any of us who rise out of that, you know, we can stand together and bear witness to what's possible for all of us.
Well, I'm so glad you're sitting across from me, and I love when you come into the office and I get to see your beautiful face. You have an essence about you. This is not a put on. This is not just for this interview that you're rising to this, this warmth and this love that just exudes without even saying the word love. I mean, I just, your essence just shines. And so we need to take a short break, Felicia. And when we come back, you're going to give us some ideas and tips, some things that people can actually walk away with today. Those of you who are listening or watching the video, if you are going through something that's difficult, or you're feeling it's a time for change, you're feeling it, you're in a transition and you kind of don't know how to take that next step, this woman, Felicia Searcy, is going to help you just today. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like you're drowning in administrivia? Do you have a podcast you would like transcribed to repurpose as a blog or even a best-selling book? Rhonda's Virtual Office is the answer to the freedom you crave so you can get busy doing what you love. Let Rhonda's Virtual Office give you the relief you need. Visit rhondasvirtualoffice.com and get some peace of mind today. Rhonda's Virtual Office is the go-to transcription service for EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen. Here's your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen Network. And I'm speaking with the most lovely, wonderful lady, Felicia Searcy, who's been telling us about her very difficult past. Parents with mental illness, a mother addiction, violence, abuse, I mean, you name it. So, and it's been just very a very difficult childhood, but at the same time, she's used all the things that she learned growing up in that kind of environment to help others follow their dreams. And Felicia, you have a sense of peace about you, and there's and wellness. So you're also very fit. You take care of your health. How important is that? Let's start there with making the change and helping people move forward.
Oh, it's essential. One of the things that I help people understand is that when we talk about success and we talk about wealth, I help people understand that it's a full spectrum. That it's, I work with four key areas: your health and well-being, your relationships, your vocation, which is how you're sharing your gifts, your talents, and you're contributing, and then your freedom in your checkbook and on your calendar. So with those things combined, when you think about your health and well-being, it's the relationship with this most magnificent instrument that we've been given, which is our bodies. And that this is the vehicle by which we live and move and have being in this life. And so to the degree that we take care of this, the way we treat our bodies is a reflection of the way we see ourselves and the way we treat ourselves. And so as you fall in love with your body and you treat it as you would a deep loving friend, or you know, your deepest relationship, which by the way it is, then your body will serve you. The other thing about your body is to realize that it's the intersection between the physical and the invisible realm. I mean, when you think about the information that this invisible realm, this intelligence, is always communicating to us, how is it communicating it to us? Through our body. You know, you get a gut feeling, you just get a sense of something. If you don't have a relationship with your body, you're shutting yourself off from that communication system, from this infinite intelligence.
And it's real interesting. I follow, I'm a yogi, right? So I'm certified to teach. I practice it. I learn as much as I can about it. I'm also a certified health coach. And one thing that one of my teachers, Rod Stryker, talks about is the transition, that we're all in transition at all times in our life, whether we're looking at the big picture from birth to death, to transition in our job, to whatever it is, we're in transition, and that can cause fear. And the fear is the thing that makes us behave, you know, in wacky ways, or prevents us from moving forward, or, you know, gets us to not treat our bodies well because we get caught up and emotionally, you know, we're a mess, so we got to eat something to make us feel better. We're in fear. And he talks about establishing a permanence, and a permanence, what you're talking about, the permanence being that if you can start with your health and achieve a calm in your mind and your body, and you can achieve that, then you will find a sense of permanence, meaning you stay the same. You're okay with the transition, whatever that might be. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's great. So let me back up a little bit then. Because what I help people understand is that, so when we're talking about full spectrum, it's to understand that we are constantly creating our experience, correct? That we are the only species on the planet that has the ability to consciously choose the images that we mentally rehearse. So hang with me, fellas, because I'm going to wrap this back around to what you're talking about in terms of permanence. Most people, number one, don't realize that. And if they do realize that, then they're allowing what's happening outside here, or, you know, and history, past conditions, and current conditions to generate the internal images. Now, why this is important is because quantum physics is now proving what spiritual masters have taught throughout the ages, is that what we predominantly mentally rehearse then translates into the feelings in our body, which then sends out this magnetic signal to this invisible field, which then in some, you know, science fiction but real kind of way, organizes according to the results that we are transmitting with our images. We give it the pattern, it organizes according to that pattern and creates our results. Now, why this is important to what you're talking about is that to the degree of our ability to really understand that's how results are created, we become so committed to, number one, really tapping into that life force that's seeking a greater expression by means of us, which is your dream. So when we talk about permanency, all of this out here is malleable. It's continually changing. The permanence is what I call the law, understanding our capacity to actually influence and create our results. Now, can we stop everything? No. Can we use this to ensure that nothing bad ever happens to us? No, but what it does is that it allows us to realize that there is that in us that is bigger than any outside fact and condition. And when you begin to realize that we really do have this ability to consciously choose images, and you make a decision to start working with images that absolutely light you up, and you allow those to be your guiding force rather than the images of how do I protect myself, you come to trust something so much bigger than just your human capability. And you understand that even though you have conditions, your conditions don't have you. And that's then where the sense of peace and well-being that you're talking about comes in. That's where the permanence, for me, that's the permanence, is that there is this power so much greater than me that is always calling me into a more expanded version of myself. And when I learn to live from images that I love, I'm learning and deepening my relationship with what's real, true, and permanent.
And self-awareness is the first step.
Yes.
Right? And so all of this stuff, you can't, until you are aware, it's like your 12-step program. Why do people stand up and say, hi, my name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a drug addict? Because you have to first know what's going on with you before you can actually make the change.
Yes. Yeah. And let me just be really clear that I came through a program called Al-Anon for family members and of addicts. So one of the things that I help people understand is the most powerful tool is to notice what you're noticing. And your dream then gives you the comparative element, right? That you can develop self-awareness, but if there's nothing to apply it to, then it's a concept, it's an abstract. But when you have a dream that is our images that are more expansive than your current life, and here's the real key to this, your dream is not for the getting. That your dream is for who you grow into in the process. And so you begin to build out an image of the person who grew into this magnificent being that's now a match for that more expanded image of life. And as you start building out an image and building a relationship with that person, now you're able to notice when you're on or off in terms of, with the person living this level of success, with the person living at this level of awareness, what would they be doing right now? What would they be thinking? If this condition happened, how would they respond to it? And now you've got, like I said, a comparative element that you're able, you have an image, you see who you are today, you see your habit of how you react to certain things in your world. And as you develop your capacity to literally step back and observe, to notice what you're noticing, then you learn how to do then what I call the pattern interrupt, where you interrupt the thought pattern that created the current result, and you ask, what do I want to know instead right now? Who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? And the person who created this result, what's the action that they took in this moment? That's a tool that nobody can ever take away from you. And it is not conditioned, you know, outside condition based. It's internally directed. You know, and when you think about it, that's real freedom to be able to consciously choose in any given moment how you're going to show up, who you're going to be, what's the action. And as you have this dream, that then becomes the container that then informs and defines that whole internal conversation.
How important is self-worth? Because I think one of the things that holds people back is they see it,
they see Felicia's all, you know, she's all great and happy and isn't she fabulous? And but I'll never get there. But it really comes down to I don't deserve it. How do you how what kind of role does self-worth play in it? And how do you, what's a good step to start taking now today to start building on that sense of self-worth?
I love that question. I think a sense of undeserving, of unworthiness is the fundamental human illness, that everything stems back to that. I know it was for me, just that feeling like I had to apologize for even taking up space on the planet. And so number one, it's to realize that it is a human condition. And then to really start building an awareness of how you got here. You know what? You didn't wake yourself up this morning. You can't even take one breath on your own. You didn't put yourself here. There's a, I'm gonna borrow from an ancient text, and some people may recognize where it comes from. And you know, this isn't a matter of being religious, but you know, in all ancient texts, there's truth. So this isn't factual, but there's truth to it. But there's a story about creation where this infinite energy, you know, whatever you want to call it, looked upon the void and said, "Let there be." That it looked upon a void and it saw something missing. And what was missing? You. The only thing that could fill that void was you. And so this creative intelligence wove you into existence from the only substance it has to use, which is the substance of itself, which is love itself. That you were created from the very substance of love. And the more you come to know that you are here by divine appointment, and to understand that that sense of unworthiness, that's just a habit that somebody in a very unskilled way programmed this into you, but it's not reality. It's not true. And so the more you're able to just be in awe of how you got to be here. I mean, just if you think about the human body alone and the beauty and the elegance and the complexity of the human body, that what energy would create something so magnificent as this human body that, by the way, we as human beings have not been able to replicate yet, and then say, go, have a mediocre, unworthy life. It just, it's too much, I mean, logically, it's too much of a disconnect. So one of the ways to help really grow a greater sense of worthiness is just be in awe of yourself and really just start interrupting the pattern and surround yourself with people who are able to see you for who you really are. And understand that it is a process. And it can be done. You can scrape away all those layers of lies and come down to what is true.
So when you wake up in the morning, and if you're feeling, you wake up, and if you're not feeling that sense of love and gratitude, and you're feeling an itch, something's got to change. It does. And the first thing is this awareness and this gratitude. And I love that when you kind of look at the big picture, you know, and just hone in on it starts here and then hone in on the fact that you're even here on this planet and you're walking this earth and your body. I'm always in awe of how the body is perfect. And, you know, people who suffer from, they you know, with weight issues, for example, that the body wants to do the right thing.
Yes.
It wants to do the right thing. It wants to eat the right thing. And it will try to compensate, you know, and you've just got to allow it. So, Felicia, we can talk all day long. And I would love to, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. So, can you just kind of sum up, give people what they can do the minute they stop listening or stop watching this video? What can they do right now today?
So right now, today, I encourage you to commit your life to living to the most powerful, reverent question that you can learn to live from, which is, what would I love? Because when you learn to live from that question, what you're doing is that you are understanding that love itself is seeking a richer, freer, fuller expression by means of you. And when you learn to live from that question and build out a life that you love, not only are you blessed, but this is truly how you bring your greatest contribution to the body of humanity.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is just such an honor to know you and to have you a part of eWomen Network. Namaste. May the light in me honor the light in you.
Right back at you, Phyllis.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.